high level. But let us say a few words as far as we may be able. But in the meantime, we will be passing around the question sheet. So please feel free to write down any questions on the question sheet. Who has the question sheet? Pravana. Oh, okay. So this devotee over here has a question sheet, that's fine. So, yeah, write your questions down. If you don't have a question, just pass it on. And like this, shortly we'll have a look at some of your questions. Yes, yeah, so this topic then that we were given, I saw it a few days ago, passing the time with Krishna's pastimes, and I was trying to understand what does it mean? What is the inner meaning? The hidden meaning? Passing the time with Krishna's pastimes. At least one way it could perhaps be interpreted or applied is that we spend so much time, well, at least many people spend a lot of time watching television, and watching television essentially means, at least in so many cases, you're watching some drama or some comedy or some show. You know, they're trying to present a story, you could say. In other words, they're trying to present some pastime. Some people doing something. This is a pastime. So, in other words, people are very preoccupied with what other people are doing and some action story, some adventure story, something like this. When I was a child, I read a lot. I really read a lot. But one of the first things that I read, which really captured my attention extremely powerfully, was the books by C.S. Lewis, The Narnia Chronicles, if you're familiar with them. The first one I read was The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. Are you familiar with that?
Yes.
Yeah. You heard of that? They made a movie of it some recently. Right, so I read that and I was just captivated. I was completely captivated by that story. It was just overpowering, actually. So I read the whole series. What is it? The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. Prince Caspian. The Voyage of the Dawn Treader. And there are a couple of others. See, I can still remember. That was when I was like 10 years old, so it's 50 or more years ago. I can still remember it vividly. And what is it? It's pastimes. It's just, well, it's a fictitious story, a fairy story about magic and all sorts of kind of mystical beings. In other words, it's pastimes. Some story of something happening and heroes and villains and all sorts of goings on between them, and in the end, victory for good. So pastimes. People are attracted to pastimes. Be it of that sort, be it some action story, some action hero, James Bond, defying death and defeating bad people, albeit some romantic story, Romeo and Juliet. It's just a concoction. Someone just invented it. It is not real. But people are very attracted. There was no Romeo. There was no Juliet. It's just a very cleverly constructed story which captures so many people's hearts. People are looking for these types of things. Means people are looking for pastimes. Why are people looking for pastimes? Well, I think there are two reasons. The first reason is because ordinary life in this world is not very interesting, stimulating, exciting, nice. It's not really. You know, if we made a movie, say, of Mr. Ordinary's life, what would it be? It would depict, I got up in the morning, I had a cup of coffee, I went to work, when at work I just did the usual things, and then we had a tea break. And I thought, wow, that's good. So if your life is such that the tea break is something nice, oh, good. That means you don't have much of a life. No, really, I tell you. If your life is such that you look forward to going home in the evening, when can I come home and sit in front of TV and watch the mindless rubbish on television? If that's what your life is, it means you don't have much of a life. And if we made a film about that, you know, the ordinary life, it would be true, but it would be so dull. So, people know. They don't want to see that. They want to see something, oh, exciting and thrilling, and, you know, some tension and drama like this. Because regular life is so boring and just so regular. And who wants to just see regular things? People want to see something irregular, something special. So this is a very interesting perspective on the subject, is that in so many cases, people's lives are just not very worthy of a lot of attention. In so many cases, people's lives are just not very interesting. In so many cases, people's lives are like that. So, in order to become happy, happier, they need to go into some illusory wonder world. That's what they need. And then they feel, oh, look at this, oh, excitement, something interesting. Actually, their lives are not interesting, but they have to have some dream world they can enter into, and then they feel, okay, that's good. Isn't it true? In many ways, it's true. Even when I was young, there was no television. We would listen to the radio. And, you know, same sort of things. what you watch on TV, same things, but just voices on radio. Yeah. My favorite was, there was a show with Spike Milligan, Peter Sellers, and some other people like that. It was called The Goon Show. The Goon Show. It was so funny. It was just so incredibly funny. But life is not funny like that. And sometimes life is funny. But normally life is just fairly dull and mediocre. So people, they're looking for some pastime, some excitement, some humor, some drama. And because their ordinary lives are not like that. So people are looking for pastimes. But now, in this world, the pastimes available are just not so nice anyway. They're just not so nice anyway. Like I mentioned Romeo and Juliet, those of you who are a little familiar with the story will know that it is tragic. In the end, they kill themselves, both of them. Romeo and Juliet, both of them, commit suicide. So that's not very nice, is it? What about, you know, there's the story, like fairy tale, I remember from my childhood. Is it Sleeping Beauty or Snow White? One of these, I forget which one. But whoever, let us say Snow White, or maybe it was, anyway, let us just say Snow White. In the end, she is rescued by Prince Charming. Is that Snow White or is that Sleeping Beauty? Is it Snow White? All right. Okay. And Prince Charming and Snow White go riding off into the sunset, and the story ends. You know how it ends? They all lived happily ever after. But you know what the fact is? The fact is they did not live happily ever after. One of our devotees wrote the sequel, what happened afterwards, after they rode off. And you know what happened? Snow White and Prince Charming got married, and then they were so, you know, they were so attracted to each other, they just couldn't control themselves at all. Before they knew it, they had 15 children. Count them. Maybe more. And Prince Charming, now 15 children, that's expensive. He had to get two jobs, plus a job on the weekend, to pay for 15 children. So he was just on the go from morning till night, 7 days a week, 25 hours a day, 8 days a week, just to maintain the family. And Snow White was at home with the 15 children. And I don't know how many of you have like more than 5 children. That's a challenge. That's a challenge. Control 6 children so they don't kill each other. Kill themselves, smash everything. But you try 15 children, it's just madness. So Snow White was at home with their 15 children, and she was just totally frazzled. She couldn't handle it. And he would get back home after working 3 jobs, 8 days a week, and he'd be completely finished, and Snow White would just let him have it, because she was so frustrated looking after 15 children all day. And of course, after having 15 children, generally, you know, a woman after 15 children, she tends, the body tends to expand and sort of wear out. And she's getting older and it's difficult to look so, you know, so nice. In Chatsworth, what did they call them? Rockets? Do they call them rockets? Something like that. Is it rocket? What do they call it? There's a special term for some, you know, foxy lady. So after 15 children, Snow White, it was all too much. She looked totally worn out. She was not the beautiful young girl who Prince Charming had rescued before. So after some time, they divorced. But you didn't hear that part of the story, did you? No. Anyway, please don't mind my sense of humor. So this is the problem. The pastimes in this material world. James Bond, big action hero. But he is just, you know, just a really low-class person who's just into just chasing women and really, like, too low-class, actually. And all of them, at least the vast majority, they're all big meat-eaters. They like, you know, their steak sucking blood. Unfortunately, it's true, actually. How can a person like that be a hero? He's just a philanderer, a cheap chaser of women, a cheap chaser of cheap women, a meat eater, and, you know, freely taking intoxication as if it's cool. Whereas actually it's extremely stupid. Extremely stupid. And this is a hero. And we're watching the pastimes of such a person. And we're thinking, oh, this is entertainment. And if you call this entertainment, sure. You know, you really, there's a shortage of real entertainment if you call that entertainment. So, that's one thing. That's one thing. People, life is so ordinary and so unexciting. People are looking for something, so they go into some illusory world of watching some film or television show like that. But even that is not very good. The heroes and so on are just not very nice. So that's one thing. But the other thing is, the reason that we're looking for something interesting, stimulating, exciting, some pastimes, oh, how nice. The reason we're looking is because we all, each one of us, we have an eternal relationship with Krishna. And that is interesting. That relationship, that's very beautiful, very wonderful. And Krishna is what a hero. If you're looking for a hero, forget Rambo completely. Krishna, what a hero! If you're looking for a love story, forget Romeo and Juliet. Forget it completely. Radha and Krishna, what a love story. It's amazing. And it's happy. It's truly happy. And it is true love. It is not the so-called love. I heard, what is it? what's it called, Twilight? The vampire and the werewolf, right, are chasing after the girl. Am I right? Did I get it? The vampire and the werewolf. Gee whiz, isn't that crazy? And she wants to become a vampire herself. Oh. So what sort of love story is that? I mean, that's just too much, really. Truly, it's too much for any person who has at least, you know, a little intelligence. But Radha and Krishna, what a love story. And it is real, it is actually love. It is actually love. It is not just, you look good to me, I look good to you, so let's get together. That's not love. That's lust. That's lust. So yes, actually, within everyone's heart, even though we may not remember in very concrete terms now, but deep within us, there is a memory. There is remembrance of that relationship. There's some subtle remembrance. We are looking for that. We're looking for that in day-to-day life even. But actually we're looking for that in these fantasy worlds which we like to go into in the name of entertainment and stimulation like that. We are actually looking for our relationship with Krishna. That love story, we are trying to find, we're attracted to, we're interested in. Even that love story, we would like to have as our own story, our own life, how we would like to find love. That, it's all, that quest is all based on a subtle remembrance from long time ago, because we were with Krishna before. We were with Krishna. And it's such a thing, even though you forget it, you cannot really forget it. You cannot really forget it. It's too deeply ingrained in our beings. Although we may not remember it in concrete terms, very specifically in detail, but just that aspiration, we're looking for love, to be loved, and to give our love, really give our love, and to really be loved. That aspiration has its root within our heart, in our eternal relationship with Krishna, actually. It is there. And there's some hint in subtle terms. Yeah. So in Krishna consciousness then, the idea of Krishna consciousness is that we, of course, we are practicing, we're trying to reawaken that dormant relationship with Krishna. And the actual recollection of that, which is there within us. The process of Krishna consciousness means working on bringing that out again, uncovering it. But part of the process is to hear about the pastimes of Krishna, to hear about them, and having heard about them, to try to regularly remember them, rather than sit in front of television in the evening watching I don't know what the latest shows are these days at all, but rather than doing that and going off into that little fantasy world of the television show, but rather we should be studying the pastimes of Krishna. We should just be remembering those pastimes and trying to absorb ourselves in remembering them and in trying to understand them. Yes, this is what we should be doing. This is all part of the process of Krishna consciousness, and it's very wonderful. You know what I tell people sometimes, devotees? Sometimes I ask devotees that you ask yourself, how many pastimes can you remember? How many pastimes do you know? Write them down. How about this? This is an interesting thing. It is done. It's a process which is used even materially, but spiritually. If I say to you that you recite names of Krishna without repeating a name, but you recite names of Krishna and you don't repeat one, and in between saying one name and saying the next name, you are allowed maximum 2 seconds. And it's being timed. You're allowed maximum 2 seconds. Before 2 seconds, after speaking the last name, before 2 seconds passes, you have to speak another name of Krishna, a different name. How long would you be able to go for? You think about it. We've done this before with devotees. Krishna, Govinda, Gopina, Madan Mohan, and you know, you just go on like that. And see how long you can go on for. So really, you know, there's one great personality. His name is Anantashesh. He's actually a form of Lord Balaram, really. He's a form of Lord Balaram, Anantashesh. He has been reciting pastimes of Krishna. He has 1,000 mouths. He's a snake, actually. He has 1,000 mouths. He has been reciting pastimes of Krishna eternally. There was no beginning. And a different pastime with each mouth, simultaneously, he has never repeated the same pastime. How many pastimes do you know? You think about it. We should be trying to increase our Krishna consciousness in different ways, and one way is studying, learning, and remembering pastimes of the Lord. So in the evening, rather than sit in front of the stupid television, even the materialistic people call it the idiot box, rather than sit in front of that, we can study some new pastime, memorize some pastime, just recall some pastimes for an hour or two. Yeah. So the topic was passing the time with Krishna's pastimes. These are some thoughts on the subject. I'll leave it up to you to take it forward. But I think it's very important. It's very important. Actually, we need to learn Krishna. It's one thing to say, yes, we should be spontaneous and attracted to Krishna, not just rules and regulations and formalities. So there's certainly something to be said for that. But still, we should try to learn Krishna. We should try to learn Krishna consciousness, like we should try to learn verses from Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, like that. We should try to learn stories. We should try to learn different arguments that Krishna presents step by step. He's presenting some point, gradually developing the point, and then bringing out the conclusion of the point. We should try to learn these things, and that will help us to progress in our Krishna consciousness. Okay, so here we have a few questions. I've got a few questions here. I assume the question sheet is still going around, so I don't know where it is, but okay, let's try to deal with these to start off. It seems so difficult to attain the ultimate goal of our life. What can we do, Maharaj? Thank you. Well, yes. In one sense, you know, one thing Prabhupada said is that Krishna consciousness is simple for the simple, but complicated for the complicated, or difficult for the difficult, like that. But actually, Krishna consciousness, if you are simple in the sense of very straightforward, and honest and just sincere, genuine, like that, without pretensions and without ulterior motives and all these types of things in the back of the mind, if we just try to accept Krishna, surrender to Krishna, and serve Him and try to please Him, then actually life becomes extremely simple. Krishna consciousness becomes extremely simple. And you can make quick progress. Even actually a child can make very quick progress. But to be fair, to be honest, and to be realistic, we see that for many people who are devotees and who are basically committed to Krishna consciousness, like they're initiated and they're maintaining the standards of chanting their rounds and following the regulative principles and so on like that. But still we see in so many cases that yes, they face challenges and sometimes they have problems. So therefore, okay, we can agree with what you say here. It seems so difficult to attain the ultimate goal of our life. What can we do? Yes, well, what you can do, we admit that it's not so easy. Why is it not so easy? One of the main reasons is because we are so habituated to our old ways. Material life, material standards, material enjoyments. We're very conditioned by those things, and we accept them as reality to, in many ways, although they're not. And like material enjoyment, sense gratification, we, in many ways, we accept, yes, this is how I'll get happiness, through gratifying my senses. So we're very used to this way of life and these standards and these principles, material principles. So what can we do? You know, the thing is, there is not like some secret, just cure all, solve all problems, press the right button and bingo. Well, not bingo, but success. No, in Krishna consciousness it doesn't really work like that. There is the process of devotional service. And in the process of devotional service, you could say they're not exactly shortcuts. Some nifty little shortcut and you just, you know, circumvent the process, just jump ahead, just like that. We need to follow the process, step by step. The thing is, if we actually follow the process very nicely, very sincerely, then to whatever degree we really apply ourselves like that, our progress will accelerate. Yeah. And you can advance very quickly. You can advance very quickly if you really follow the process carefully and really chant very nicely. One not exactly trick, it's not a trick, but one very important factor, which you, if you can get this and apply this, it will really help you accelerate your process. It is this, that if you associate, well, we become like the people we associate with, or that we accept the association of, we accept the influence of, we become like them. Prabhupada would say, if you associate with drunkards, you become a drunkard. And if you associate with devotees, you become a devotee. And if you associate with advanced devotees, you become an advanced devotee. Yes, this is Krishna consciousness. If you associate with advanced devotees, you become an advanced devotee by their influence, even though you may not be so, you know, strictly speaking, within yourself you may not be so stable and strong spiritually. But if you associate with those who really are stable and strong in Krishna consciousness, you'll pick up their stability and strength. This is a very important aspect of Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada would say, Krishna consciousness is 90% association. 90%. It's a big thing. A very big thing. Whereas if you associate means accept the influence of devotees who are not serious, or even people who are just not devotees, if you accept their influence, then you will go in that direction yourself. Yeah. So, what can we do? This is what I'm suggesting. Associate. Try to associate closely with advanced devotees. Devotees are more advanced than you. And this means that you have to be very submissive to them, very receptive to them, open to them, willing to learn, wanting to learn from them, from what they say, from their example, their activities, their practical lives. So if you do like that, don't just stay in your own comfort zone, you know, hanging out on the Sunday program, waiting for the Sunday feast. Oh, okay, won't be long. Yeah. Progress will not be there so much. But if you really associate with senior devotees, advanced devotees, and go out of your way to take their association, accept their association, it will have a big influence on you for the better. Yeah. Okay, next question. Low self-esteem or low self-confidence can be an obstacle in association and service because one can become quite introverted. What can one do about this? Yeah. Well, the thing is, low self-esteem, low self-confidence in this sense means you're really in material consciousness. That's what it means. Because actually, Lord Chaitanya encourages us very strongly, Trinada Pisanichena, Tarora Pisahishnana, Amanina Amana Dena Kirtaniya Sadahari, that one should chant the holy names of the Lord in a humble state of mind, thinking oneself lower than the straw in the street. One should be more tolerant than a tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, ready to offer all respects to others. In such a state of mind, one can chant the holy names of the Lord constantly. And only in such a state of mind will one be able to chant the holy names of the Lord constantly. So, but this verse of Lord Chaitanya's, I could see materialistic people, you know, sort of psychologist types, into these subjects, low self-esteem, how to deal with it, and so on. I could see people like that saying that this Chaitanya, he has low self-esteem. He is encouraging us to have low self-esteem. We should see ourselves as lower than the straw in the street. Isn't it? It's like he's encouraging that. And if you read sometimes the writings of very great devotees like Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, who wrote Chaitanya Charitamrita, he says numerous things along these lines, but one which comes to mind is, he says, I am lower than the worm in stool. Anyone who just hears my name becomes sinful. Now, from the materialistic point of view, if that's not low self-esteem, I don't know what is. That's like super low self-esteem. But actually, this is encouraged. And Lord Chaitanya, that verse he spoke, we just mentioned, Trinada Pisanichena, one should chant the holy names of the Lord in a humble state of mind. Lord Chaitanya said, you should wear this verse around your neck like a necklace. In other words, you should just keep it with you. But it's not a matter, there's a big difference between low self-esteem in the material sense, psychological sense, and humility in Krishna consciousness. There's a very big difference. Low self-esteem in the material sense means that I have been trying to compete with the other materialists. Who can get ahead? Who can be most successful? Who can defeat the others? Who will be the winner? I've been trying to compete like that, and I lost. And I really lost. I got trounced. I got wiped out by the competition. I came last. And so, when I wanted to be first, yeah, I should be first. Let me be first, but I came last. So then I think, oh, I'm useless, I'm hopeless, I'm pathetic. And sometimes people become suicidal or depressive, or, you know, they take to liquor or drugs or something like that, drown their sorrows. But you know the song. Have you heard the song? I never heard it. I just saw the words. I tried to drown my sorrows, but they learnt how to swim. Did you hear that? It's a good one. I tried to drown my sorrows, but they learnt how to swim. So they're still there. Yes. So, but in material life, this is what happens. Either, you know, either if people get defeated and smashed and just wiped out in the competitive business working environment like that, then, you know, some of them, they just become really aggressive, and I'm just going to do it anyway, and then they try again, and who knows what will happen next time. Or some of them just give up, and they just accept being sort of, you know, yeah, I'm a pretty useless person, what can I do? I'll just try to be happy being useless. Oh, you know, they get in some psychological state. Sure, it's heavy. It's really heavy. But this is all there is in material life. This is all there is. So then they get low self-esteem and low self-confidence. And maybe it's right. Maybe they are useless. Anyway, we won't get into that, but humility, real humility in Krishna consciousness is something very different. Real humility means it begins with understanding the fact that actually I'm extremely unqualified in and of myself. Whatever success, whatever capabilities I have, they're given by Krishna. Whatever success I have is given by Krishna. Despite me, despite the fact that I'm not very qualified. So, even though I am not very qualified, and even maybe I'm extremely unqualified and disqualified, but still, Krishna is so wonderful that if I really do my best to serve Him and please Him, and if I really pray for His mercy in a very sincere, very genuine and humble way, then Krishna, He can give so much mercy that even an unqualified person like myself, I can end up being hugely successful. Because it happens. It happens many, 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 many times. It happens. It has happened. It continues to happen. That devotees who, in a material sense, you might not expect to be successful in doing something in Krishna consciousness, but they really surrender to Krishna, and then they become fantastically successful. It's amazing. By Krishna's mercy, But when you're in that state of mind, then it's clear. It's Krishna. It's not just me that I'm, yes, I'm very good, so therefore I'm confident because I'm good. But now we're talking about having confidence in Krishna and not this illusory self-confidence that I am, you know, some sort of qualified person and this is what I am. So there's a big difference between Vaishnav humility at the lotus feet of the Lord and being a failed materialist who really wanted to be a successful materialist and just be the best and have people saying, oh, you're great. But then you end up, you just fail and people look at you and they say, oh, look at him, what a stupid. Anyway, this is true. It's very true. It's very important to get this idea in Krishna consciousness. Because if you get this idea, then you'll find that you can do almost anything in Krishna's service. You can do things you never dreamt you might possibly be able to try to do, but you can actually do it just like that. But it's Krishna, by Krishna's mercy. So, okay. Maharaj is on next, is it? Yeah, okay. Let me just try one final one. You know, let me just, in regards to this thing about low self-esteem and humility, let me just offer myself as an example. You know, frankly, I don't regard myself, in fact, not just don't regard myself, I know. I'm not a very qualified person in many ways. I don't have a university degree. I dropped out because I won't go through all of that, because I couldn't be bothered, really. Yeah. I retired at the age of 21 because I thought this is just ridiculous. Working in some crazy job for some crazy boss. This is ridiculous. So I retired. So anyway. But somehow or other, I am currently, whether I like it or not, whether you like it or not, whether anybody likes it or not, I'm the chairman of the governing body of our Hare Krishna movement internationally. Isn't that amazing? I mean, it really is. And not only am I the chairman, I am the chairman for the second time. You would have thought after the first time they would have said, never again. But here I am again for a second term. Three months and 23 days and about 20 hours to go and about 6 minutes and 42 seconds. But I remember the first time, it was 2003, there was the election, who'll become the chairman. So there were a few candidates. We were asked to step out while they discussed and voted, so we did. And there I was waiting outside. And I thought, Krishna, if you want me to be the chairman, okay, I'll do it. If that's what you want, if that's really what you want, I'll do it. And I'll try my best. But Krishna, if you want me to be the chairman, as far as I'm concerned, I think you're crazy. I'm serious. I think that works. And I think it's true. Sometimes a little extraordinary. Okay, I'll just answer this, or try to answer this one last question. What does Rama in the Maha Mantra refer to? Who, in other words, who is being addressed here with this term Rama? Well, Srila Prabhupada discusses this point. It's in, is it Chaitanya Charitamrita, if I remember correctly? I think it's Chaitanya Charitamrita. Prabhupada discusses. And Prabhupada says, one of my disciples asked me and said, does it mean, is it referring to Lord Ram, Lord Ramachandra, Sita Ram, Lakshman, Hanuman, that Ram? And Prabhupada says, I explained that it refers to three. There are three Rams, means forms of the Lord, who are addressed by this name Ram. One is, of course, Lord Ram, Ramachandra, Sita Ram, Lakshmana, among that Ram. Another one is Lord Balaram, Krishna's older brother. Lord Balaram, he can also be addressed Ram, Rama. And then the third one is Lord Parasuram, Lord Parasuram, the wielder of the axe. So he can also be addressed as Ram. So any one of them, two of them, all three of them can be addressed as Ram, and there is nothing wrong at all with seeing this term, this name Ram, as being indicating, referring to any one, two, or all three of them. Yes. So that is the situation. So, okay. Thank you all for listening very patiently. Now we will hand you over into the very capable hands of His Holiness Bhakti Brihat Bhagavat Maharaj, who will answer the rest of the questions, sort out any confusion I may have created, and in general help you very much in your Krishna consciousness. For my part though, thank you all very much. Hare Krishna.